As you may recall from the past, every once in a while, I like to put in a little promo for a podcast that I enjoy. So check this out.
By the end of the song, I was ecstatic.
That song's so fine. You know, I love that song.
It entered the realm of pure magic.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth McQueen. You're used to hearing artists talk about their own music, but in KUTX's new podcast, This Song, artists talk about the music they love, the songs that won't let them go. Subscribe to This Song on iTunes or find the latest episodes at kutx.org.
And now we'll get on with the show. The day I talked to Ian Foster about his song, The Great Wave, had a special significance to him.
You know, Remembrance Day just happened yesterday, November 11th in Canada. I'm from Newfoundland, a small island on the East Coast, and all of these Newfoundland troops went off to serve in that First World War. And in this battle, they were basically completely slaughtered within the course of some very small amount of time, like an hour. Basically, like every family in Newfoundland lost a brother, father, uncle.
So when he went to a small town in Italy and talked to a man about a castle that had been occupied by Nazi troops, it had a special significance. But one small detail turned it into the inspiration for a song.
He sort of got a bit of a smile on his face, and he said, when I was a little kid, it was probably 20 years after the war, and he would sneak into the castle, and he would play, and he'd play like Dungeons & Dragons and other kind of kids' games.
Where he took that inspiration and what it's like to play a song with a 60-piece orchestra is coming up in today's episode of Tell Me About Your Song. From their crumbling walls, he leaves at dusk, victorious and strong. In his heart, the opulence of older days long gone. Hello and welcome to Tell Me About Your Song, the podcast where I talk to musicians and songwriters about a song they've written. We're recording this at the New England Regional Folk Alliance Conference. Today's guest is Ian Foster, and the song he'll be talking about is named The Great Wave, and it's from the album of the same name. So where would you like to start with the song, Ian?
The melody and the chords were solid from the start. I actually do have a version I play on guitar, and the riff, I guess, that sort of da-na-na-na-na that happens at the beginning of the piano part is a little bit different when I play it on guitar. It's an interesting thing in this particular case. It doesn't happen with many of my songs. Usually the riff is the riff, you know, as it is with most songs. But for some reason, this one, I kind of like both versions for different reasons. Maurizio is the king again today. As he sneaks into the castle, Francoville to play. I'm a Canadian songwriter, toured in Canada since 2007, and I started touring overseas in 2010. So I've played in several places in Europe, Austria, Germany, the Netherlands, and Italy. And the very first tour I did was in Italy, and the second one included that as well. And I believe this song came from that second tour there. Just the way our booker, you know, his areas of expertise were smaller areas in the north. And so he was booking us just sort of like I'm sure you would tour here in the States or in Canada. You know, you might play the major centers, but you'd also play tons of small towns along the way, of course. And one of these towns was a super small place called Francoville Bisio. And it was this little town. I like to joke that it's sort of like those National Geographic, like lost towns of Italy. You know, it's like beautiful castle set into a rock side. And there's all these little houses on the hill. And the town is sort of built up like that. And it's in wine country. And our touring time there was spring and summer. So it was totally idyllic, you know, just amazing weather and romantic in that way. And so we were playing this little club, which was only a small place, but it was sort of like one of those towns that's so small that this was it. This was the main club. So it was super fun because the whole town basically goes to that one place. But prior to the show, after soundcheck, myself and my partner, Nancy, started wandering the streets a little bit. And I was like, let's go check out the castle. It looked like it was in really great shape. Sometimes you see and there are more ruins than anything else. But this one looked in great shape, but it was completely locked up. And it had sort of another, I don't know what you would call it, like a community of old houses that were far more decrepit around it. And we assumed this was like the old town, maybe, that had been abandoned and expanded into the modern town that was there now. And that was sort of correct. But the castle was of real interest. It was just this really compelling, solid looking castle that was completely locked up. And we had no idea why. And so after trying to explore and look for a way in, we went back to the venue. And the owner of that venue was a man named Maurizio.
So we started talking to him and I just posed the question, you know, so what's the story with this castle? And he's like, oh, that old thing, you know, he just sort of blew it off. And so we did the show and that was all fine. And then Maurizio, after he, you know, enjoyed the show, and we got to talking a little bit. And I should say at this point that when I say we got to talking, Maurizio spoke only Italian and a few English words here and there. And I don't speak Italian. I only speak English. But I had a guitar player for this tour who was Italian and could translate for me. He even translated for me on stage in some of these small towns where English was not that prominent. And so we basically had this three-person conversation where I would ask a question, translate it, Maurizio would talk, Ruben, my guitar player, would translate back to me. So Maurizio sat us down at this point with some whiskey in front of us, and he said, okay, so here's the story. The last occupants of this castle were the Nazis during the Second World War. And they basically occupied the town for at least a year or two near the end of the war. And they drove their trucks up to the gates of this castle and they loaded all the valuable things into those trucks and carted it off to either Germany or Switzerland. And none of that stuff has ever come back to that town. The castle is now completely empty, save for the paintings or the frescoes that are painted on the walls on the inside of the castle. There's just nothing in there. And so it belongs to some family and they've locked it up. And that was the basic story of what happened. And then, of course, he was really painting a vivid picture, you know, and it's stuff that is in the history books. But when you are hearing it in Italian from this older guy who's telling it to you to your face, I mean, there are still some occupants in this town who survive from the war, and they still sleep with weapons under their bed every night because they're afraid the war will come back. That was the sort of trauma inflicted during the Second World War. And he told other stories as well, little anecdotes about the Germans occupying this town and so on. And he culminated it a bit with this story about how near the end of the war, when the Germans were getting really desperate, they tried to recruit, I believe it was 142 men from that town and some of the surrounding towns to join the Nazi party to fight. And they all refused, and they were all taken to the hills and killed. And that struck a chord for two reasons for me. I mean, obviously it struck a chord because that's a sad and dark thing to happen. But on a personal history note, I'm from Newfoundland, a small island on the East Coast, and there's a very important part of our history about the Battle of Beaumont Hamel. And in that battle, Newfoundland, which at the time wasn't actually part of Canada, it was during the First World War, all of these Newfoundland troops went off to serve in that First World War. And in this battle, they were basically completely slaughtered within the course of some very small amount of time, like an hour. And it was, again, in the hundreds of people, I believe, maybe the high hundreds. Again, I wish I'd looked up this fact before this podcast, but you could find the Battle of Beaumont Hamel online. But regardless, basically like every family in Newfoundland lost a brother, father, uncle, someone. Everyone was affected by this particular historic event. And it still really reverberates through, you know, ceremony, statues, Remembrance Day events. You know, Remembrance Day just happened yesterday, November 11th in Canada. And so it was something that I equated, like here I am half a world away and I'm having this man tell me this story. I'm like, yeah, this touches home to me in a way that I didn't expect, you know? So at this point, Maurizio had been talking for quite some time. He'd set up this incredible story. I don't even know if he really meant it. You know, as a storyteller, he was just, it seemed brilliant after the fact. He'd given me this great 360 on the town and he told me about the castle and, you know, it was very compelling stuff. And then he sort of knocked it all down for me after setting it all up. He sort of got a bit of a smile on his face and he said, when I was a little kid, it was probably 20 years after the war had ended. He was 10. So he never really remembered the war. He said the castle was locked up, but it wasn't as locked up back then. It was possible to get in, especially if you were a nosy kid. So he would sneak into the castle and he would play, and he'd play like Dungeons and Dragons and other kind of kids' games, which again, I related to because I would sort of do that when I was a kid, but I'd be like under my parents' step in their suburban St. John's Street, yeah. You know, not in this immaculate castle with just the paintings on the walls. At that moment, I could just see this 10-year-old just having fun, you know, being there and laughing and dreaming and all these things. And he's in this place that had been gutted by the war. And it was just such an incredible image to me. Just that as like a freeze frame, if it was a frame in a film and you could see what was going on there. And I basically went home from the gig that night to my guitar player's house a couple of hours away, just outside Milan, and sat down and wrote all the words and wrote the music very, very quickly on the guitar at the time, just because that's what I had with me. But that's the origin of the song. It's a true story. Names not even changed to protect the innocent, as the phrase goes. And so that's where the Great Wave came from.
Maurizio is the king again today. As he sneaks into the castle, Francoville to play. All is rendered on to him, save history. The great wave that took away what used to be.
The guy who inspired the song, has he ever heard it?
That's a good question. I don't have regular contact with those people directly. You know, like I had a booking agent who booked the tour. There was a girl who worked at the bar who added me on Facebook, and that's my connection to that town. And it's literally like we check in every now and then. And she knew my interest in the castle. I think I sent her the song and she really enjoyed it. And I'm not sure if she played it for Maurizio or not, but I know she was really moved by having a song written by a Canadian about her town. Much like I would be, but Italian came to Newfoundland and was so inspired to write about a particular historical site there. Like at the very least, that'd be like, wow, that's cool that it influenced someone from a completely different culture in a powerful way. So I think that there's been that connection with the song, you know, and she's tried to give me regular updates about the castle and letting me know if they're hoping to open it up at some point and all that stuff. So, and of course, we're hoping to get back there. I haven't been back there for a few years just for logistical reasons, but I'm hoping to tour there again and be able to bring this record, which is a fairly new record. This record only came out last summer. So I'm hoping to bring this record to the town again, you know, for that very reason, to have that really special sort of, I've been very lucky in my life so far with songwriting that there's been a bunch of songs I've been inspired by a certain place. And then I've, for whatever reason or through whatever luck, I've been able to go back and play that song in that place. And there's something very like, some form of closure, I guess, or just sort of satisfaction about doing that, right? They're just having that loop of creativity where you were inspired by something and you made something and then you got to deliver that something back to the place where it came from. With the album version that we're kind of talking about here, I knew that there was like there's a sparseness to some of the lyrics. I mean, it's not a very long lyrical song in terms of the verses. And so I knew that I wanted the music to really speak for a lot of the other emotions, because that complexity of that first image alone would sort of be an exercise in sparse storytelling with the music saying the unsaid parts. So I knew that I would want strings, and I thought the piano could really carry this sort of instrumental soloist kind of beginning to the song, but still keep up really well with the big outro string section that happens.
But 20 years will change what you can find.
So in the last verse, the strings kind of go away and it's just the piano.
Yeah, I believe a bass comes in. I think we do a sort of breakdown right after the instrumental solo section.
That we all had at the start.
And then we sort of do the big, there is no moment that can change noble heart refrain at the end. Repeated refrain, there is no moment that can change a noble heart, was sort of my tip of the hat tribute to that particular story, right? The idea that nothing could change these men's mind, even death, because they just believed in their faith in their own people and all that, and the sort of bravery element of that. So that's where that line came from.
That can change what we pull upon.
You said, you know, this is a song that you play on piano and guitar. And is that common, or do you normally have songs that you pretty much are for guitar or are pretty much for piano, or do they often kind of cross over like that?
Yeah, it's interesting. Piano is my first instrument, and I'm primarily known and for a reason as a guitar player, because I bring my guitar everywhere. It's what I tour with usually. And it is what I write the majority of things on. So at some point that just happened. I'm not really sure why. But piano is something that I have a deep affinity for. And I feel like there's certain songs that just call out to be on the piano. And of course, variety is the spice of life. You know, just like it's the spice of songwriting. So having that option is truly wonderful. And every record, there's at least one piano-based song on it. And those songs all were conceived on the piano first. It is sort of like a division in my material that I enjoy, just the fact that there's certain songs that just seem to work on piano. And oftentimes, I won't try to convert those to guitar when I'm only doing a guitar show. With the exception of The Great Wave, when I was touring that a lot and there wasn't a piano there, I would do a guitar version because I really want to tell that story and play that song. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, it's a treat for me, perhaps more than the audience, who knows, that I get to sort of, sometimes there'll be a piano there and I can sort of break out songs that I never play, you know?
Is there a particular place where this tends to go in a set?
It's a bit of a tricky one because it has a big story. I mean, I obviously condensed that story a little bit live than I did here, but I do tell all of the highlights of that story. Mm-hmm. I think it's really important and it gives people an insight into the song live. It's also a fairly heavy song in terms of the emotion involved, the complexity. So there's only so many of those you can do a set. To be honest, unless it's a certain kind of crowd, one a set, you know, and I've got a couple of songs like this one that sort of delve into a particular character study or a situation that might be difficult or heavy. And certainly my set is not peppered with light songs. There's other heavy songs. But I feel like when you play a song like this, there's an ebb and flow to a set where it's like a song like this, I'll probably either have a more humorous story to tell after it or just do a more upbeat song because you need a palate cleanser after something like this. So generally, I feel like if I was doing two sets, I'd probably put it in the second set. I'd probably put it maybe halfway through, something like that.
The enemy came in 1944, and with foreign tongue opened up the ancient doors and lined their trucks beneath Italian sky, and the spoils of war were whatever they could find.
You could imagine that the people in this town would probably have viewed that castle with a real depression immediately following the war. Here was a part of that town's history that had been taken from them. So even after sort of the dust cleared on the town and the immediate, you know, they'd been liberated and so forth, you can imagine the years that followed. At some point, someone sort of went, but this part has been taken from us. Every day we see this castle. It's a reminder, perhaps, what has happened. And yet, here's this kid who could look at it and go, that looks cool. Let's go play there. Let's go dream there. Let's go imagine new things there, you know? So again, it stems back to that first image. You can just peel away the layers of that moment. You know, if it was nothing else other than that moment of him playing in there, it's like, that's a really interesting thing.
But 20 years will change what you can find. The empty castle now filled with a youthful mind. Dreams the dream that we all had at the start. There is no moment that could change a noble heart.
I think as children, we wanted to be Star Wars. There's a guy in black and there's a guy in white, and the guy in white beats the guy in black because the guy in black's a bad guy. But he turned out, you know, he kind of redeemed himself in the end, you know, for really doing the Star Wars comparison. But you know what I mean? It's that classic story of good triumphing over evil. And I think that as kids, that's what we want to happen. And we want the idea that there is no moment that can change noble heart. Luke Skywalker didn't go bad at the end. He had a noble heart. And I think that that's an interesting thing in the context of a kid playing in a castle that, like you said, was used as an instrument for war, that had been war torn, you know, all that stuff. And I guess it shows, you know, ultimately, not to get too heady about it, but it's that sort of indelible human spirit thing. You know what I mean? That, like, I mean, World War II, one of the great, in a not good way, events of the 20th century. People still living with weapons under their beds some several generations later for fear of the war coming back. Like, it left that mark. But yet, the next generation will be innocent to that. Hope will seem completely emptied, like it was a glass full and someone just poured it all out and there was none left. But there will always be some way to replenish that somehow. And in this case, it's Maurizio, this kid who didn't know any better.
There is no moment that could change a noble heart. There is no moment that can change.
Have you ever performed it without the introduction?
Good question. I'm sure at some point, I can't think of a specific time though. I'm compelled to tell the story, perhaps because there's the weight of it being the title track of the album as well. There's a bunch of meat to go with it. My favorite time playing this song ever was in St. John's. I had the extreme privilege of performing with the Newfoundland Symphony Orchestra. So it was about a 60-piece orchestra. We did it at the Arts and Culture Center Newfoundland, which is about a 1,000-seat soft-seater. And it was this special event, and we did four songs of mine. And they had one request of a song they personally wanted me to do. But otherwise, they said, you know, the other three are completely up to you. And as soon as they said that, I was like, this is definitely going to be one of them. Like, I just knew, just because the recorded version has basically a string quartet on it, but I could always hear it as this huge, powerful. I was like, well, what if we have 6 cellos and 10 violins and the opportunity? And they have someone who scores all the stuff for the orchestra, but I figured, you know, there's so much in the recorded version for him to work on. They have this great composer named Jim Duff. He did a fantastic job of just taking my arrangement and just fleshing it out into this incredible thing, and had other little flourishes that I didn't have in there that I thought were really brilliant. What an experience. I mean, just to be able to sit behind the piano and hear the orchestra that way. And it's a really, truly bizarre and cool experience as well, because the orchestra is not amplified. The power of that many people playing comes at you, and it's like this otherworldly thing. I mean, anyone who's seen an orchestra has been moved by it, but to like stand on the stage and like have that sound come at you for the first time. Rehearsals were hard at first. It was like, wow, I kind of feel like crying now. It was just so emotional, right? Just your music coming at you with 60 people playing it from an orchestra. It was pretty awesome. So that was probably I don't want to say that because I'm going to play it tonight, like as if it's going to be bad, but you know, it's going to be hard to beat that particular performance.
I'll allow it.
Only because it's 60-piece orchestra.
So if people would like to hear more of your music, what should they do?
You can go to the official website, which is ianfoster.ca, ianfoster.ca. I, of course, have all the things that all musicians nowadays have to have for social media. So you can find me on Facebook, Ian Foster Music. You can find me on Twitter, Ian_Foster. You can find me on Instagram, Fostro. Where else can you find me? I think I have a SoundCloud account as well, Ian Foster Music. Ian Foster Room is the extension for my YouTube channel.
Yeah, I found on YouTube that you have a series that's the story of different songs. Yeah. And I did watch the one for this song.
Oh, did you? Oh, yeah. You spoilers. There you go.
You know, I try to do research occasionally. But yeah, the version of the story that there is shorter than this.
Yeah, totally.
But
yeah.
People who are interested in this kind of thing should also definitely check out the other videos in that series.
Well. It was a series that I did create in association with just this album. I had never done it before.
Great. If you want to check out my music, it's at music.jwgh.org. So I have a website for the series. It's at tellmeaboutyoursong.com. And I'm also going to put links to Ian's websites and other things we talked about. And I'll put those show notes up on the show blog at yoursongpodcast.tumblr.com. And with all that said, we're going to go out and listen to the song we've been talking about in full, Ian Foster's The Great Wave. Enjoy.
Maoizio is the king again today, as he sneaks into the castle Francoville to play. All is rendered unto him save history, the great wave that took away what used to be. The dragon, he wins it all, as the frescoes watch him from their crumbling walls. He leaves at dusk, victorious and strong, in his his heart the opulence of older days long gone. Italian sky, and the spoils of war were whatever they could find. You can find the empty castle now filled with a youthful mind who dreams the dream that we all had at the start. There is no moment that could change a noble heart. There is no moment that could change a noble heart. No moment that could change a noble heart. There is no moment that could change a noble heart. There is no moment that could change a noble heart. There is no moment that can change, that can change what we pull apart.
So I do a thing sometimes where I tell people what their songs mean.
Cool.
Never goes well.
Please
rarely,
tell me.
Rarely if ever goes into the episode. Normally just gets cut right out.
But because of cursing in my life? And when I'd be like, no. Oh my God, man, no, that's not right at all. No.
Oh no, you're free to curse. That's not a problem at all.
Okay.
All right. That parental warning label.
I can add a few in now.
Yeah, I can put that in. It's not a problem.